never look at my eyes. So I'm a health risk. So I will do my level best to be as fruitful as possible, but as conservative with time as possible, so that I don't get litigation after the meeting. On that note, let me welcome everyone, and go straight to the agenda. Then, apologies.
Good morning, members and the guests. I got apologies from Mr. Malema, Mr. Exaidin, and Mr. Chaka. Thank you.
They'll tell us who are supposed to be here and who's not here. And regrettable, they'll give us the reasons why. Unlike this side, that's the privileged few. On that note, we had invited the department. Talk about the valuation of the liability itself.
method that has been applied and the result that came out of that evaluation, and then we'll conclude. Chairperson, you will remember that at some point we came to the committee and presented the status of the derelict and ownerless mine in South Africa. We did explain that the challenges that we had, that the mining started in the 16600s, and there was no legislation that governs how the mine must be closed after mining. It's only in the 1991 Act where there was some slight introduction of the making provision for rehabilitating the mine once the life cycle is completed. Only then in 2004, with the MPRDA coming into effect, that there were some stricter controls on what mining companies must do for after the closure of a mine. And this incorporated and integrated the different acts, like the Water Act and also the NEMA, the Environmental Management Act. And the project that the department started with was informed by the MPRDA to now start to go back to those mining companies that were abandoned or are causing high risk to the public. So I just thought we must, before we started the presentation, we must bring back that background that in ownerless and derelict mines, we are dealing with the historical issues. Going forward, the Act is clear and our role is to enforce and ensure that it's complied with in its entirety. Looking at today, therefore, we will just give you the extent of the state liability caused by those acid mine drainage in the past and the derelict and ownerless mine. And I must emphasize that this is the estimation that has been done by the department using working with the actuaries. It's not necessarily a full-blown liability to the state. It's an estimate that has been done so far. In relation to the acid mine drainage, the government has recognized the potential risk that is caused by the acid mine drainage, and the Council for Geoscience was requested to embark on a research project to identify new technologies to prevent acid mine drainage. Because we then said we cannot just look at what has happened already. Let's find better ways in which this can be prevented. Then Cabinet also appointed an interministerial committee on acid mine drainage in September 2010. And out of that committee, there was a task team that investigated this matter thoroughly and came up with certain remedial interventions that needed to be done in a long term, in a short term, and things that needed to be done immediately. Those cabinet resolutions were endorsed, and what we are currently doing is to implement the interventions that were proposed. The project, which we call Emergency Works Project, which entails pumping acid mine drainage from the western, central, and eastern basins and building neutralization of plants. And that the Department of Water Affairs will elaborate further on the work that has been done to date on that project and the estimated cost that is required in order to complete the project in its entirety.
Thank you, CFO. Honourable Chair and members, if I can just carry on there with CFO stop. So the team of experts was then appointed by the Interministerial Committee, as CFO said, and we then did a team of experts report, that was presented to Cabinet, and Cabinet approved it. And one of the things that Cabinet, amongst others, that they said is you must immediately look at the immediate problem, and that was there was a decant in the Western Basin. So the water, the acid mine drainage was flowing out in the Western Basin, and that was the first thing that we had to solve and stop that. And then what they call the short term is we realized that at the time, you know, the mining area in the Central Basin, the so-called Central Basin, and in the Eastern Basin are also at risk, because there were not many mines pumping from the Central Basin, and we all know the problems that we had in the Eastern Basin. So what they said is, the first thing that you need to do is to stop the Western Basin from discharging, and then also look at the short term, and that is to put in a pumping station in the Central and in the Eastern Basin, and also to neutralize the water, and then take out all the metal. So that was the short term. Amongst others, they also said what we need to do, and unfortunately I don't have that on the slide, but I'll just talk around it quickly, Chair, is to try and stop the ingression from surface water. And this is where DMR and Council for Geoscience is assisting us, because we know that if the water goes down, it's good quality water, but you know, tomorrow you have to pump out that same water at a much worse quality. So that's the first place to try and minimize the water that's coming in. So then in the long term, we also realized that either the neutralization process, which is the first process, is only taking out the metals and you're neutralizing the water, but you don't take out all the salts. So there should be a longer term plan as well, and that's why the Department of Water Affairs did a feasibility study to deal with that partially treated water, because the system in the Vaal River could allow that for a certain period of time, but then you need to dilute this water with good quality water. Right, so if I can go on into the slide, the key risks, of course, in the BIFs is the water security issue. And why is it the water security issue? It's because this neutralized water, once it reaches the Vaal River system, there's a commitment downstream to the Vaal River users that we have to commit to a certain standard. So you need to dilute this water with good quality water. And there's enough water to do that, but up to a certain period of time. So the process can be sustainable, but we said, you know, by 2018-19, you know, we must take this water out of the system, because then you will, of course, not have a problem with the water quality and also with the water availability. So other areas, Chair, we also looked at, together with the Department of Water and Sanitation, Department of Environmental Affairs and Mineral Resources, we also look at the Platinum Belt, we look at the Kosh area, the Free State Goldfields, the coal fields in Mpumalanga, and of course Limpopo and the KwaZulu-Natal, and then also the KwaZulu-Natal of the Northern Cape and the Central Eastern Highveld base metal mines. Because Cabinet said to us, this is a problem that you're dealing with, that's good, but you must also look nationally. Don't only look at, you know, the problem here. And the whole idea, Mr. Chair, is to be more proactive, because what we're doing currently is more like damage control. It's a reactive response, and we have to be more proactive. Chair, honorable members, this graph or this picture is where the acid mine drainage surfaced for the very first time, I think in South Africa, where we had really a gold mine that's decanting at this scale. Now, if you look at that picture, that's one of the old shafts, and the water that's typically coming out of that shaft has got a pH of 2.8, which is really acidic water. It's got an iron content between 800 and 1,200 milligrams per liter, and the sulfate level is about 4,000 milligrams per liter, and uranium can go up to 110, it's actually micrograms per liter, it's not milligrams per liter, fortunately. Chair, and then the target values, if you look at pH, what we actually need is not a 2.8, but you need between 6.5 and 8.6 pH value. The green part then, if I look at the iron, is what the environment can accept. In other words, if you discharge water at, you know, below 10 milligrams per liter of iron, that's fine with the environment, but for potable water it must actually be much below 1 milligram per liter, otherwise it's not aesthetically acceptable. And then in terms of sulfate, the environment can take about 1,000, and for drinkable water you need about 600. So, and this is, Mr. Chair, where we have the challenge. This emergency works will take out whatever we have here, except the sulfate concentration. It bring down the sulfate from 4,000 to approximately 2,500. So it's not acceptable to the environment, but because of the dilution, we make it acceptable if we have the water available, which is the case now, but we know it's not sustainable in the long term. So that's why you have to take out the sulfates by 2018-19 to make it less than 600, because for human consumption, you know, you can drink up to 600 milligrams per liter. Just to give you a comparison, what we're drinking in the bowl system at the moment is below 200 milligrams per liter. As a matter of fact, I think it's about 100. So if you have really, very good quality water, but you can go up to 600. Then in terms of uranium, for the environment, it's less than 70 micrograms. For drinkable purposes, it's less than 30 micrograms per liter. Honorable Chair, if I can then take you to the Western Basin, the so-called emergent and the immediate solution. What we've done there, we piggybacked on the Ranch uranium treatment plant. There was a treatment plant, and it was really lapidated, but we upgraded that treatment plant to be able to treat about 30 megaliters per day of acid mine drainage. The improvement in surface and groundwater quality is recorded, so there was immediate improvement in the quality of the downstream river. Unfortunately, the capacity of that plant is limited. So we know that this is a shortcut and it's an immediate solution, and we hope we have to put in a better pump station process, pump station and a treatment plant, and we are in that process. TCTA, which is our implementing agent, the Trans-Culloden Tunnel Authority, they're the implementing agent. They're putting in a pump station, so by December this year, we hope to be able to pump 70 megalitres per day. We are also engaged with one of the mining companies there to put in clarifiers, because we don't have a proper clarifier. So the system there is we went for the cheapest option, but it's okay for now, but you can't have it for a long term. So it's not sustainable for a long term, but for now it's fine. Chair, then if we go to the Central Basin, the next slide. The project commenced in January 2013, and it was commissioned in April 2014. A new treatment pump station was put up there. There's a clarifier, and the whole is a conventional state-of-the-art treatment system, and they are currently treating about 72 megalitres per day. And we manage now, because of the water table that was raising, we manage now to drop the water table to the extent that one of the mining companies, which is Central Rand Gold, we're still interested in some of the reserves. They will be able to go in underground and to take some of the, you know, take more of the reserves out. What we said at the time is we determined an environmental critical level. That's the level that you don't want the water to rise above, which means that, you know, government will pay, or the users will pay up to that level, the pumping and treatment. But if the mine wants us to go lower down, they have to bear the cost of that. So, yeah, at the moment I think we're doing fine and the treatment plant is up and running. Then, Chair, if we go to the Eastern Basin, that's the so-called Springs area, the Goedvlei area, the project there, what we're implementing is a similar project than the one in the Central Basin, except that it's much larger scale. We intend pumping from between 80 and 110 megalitres per day. The project commenced in June this year, and we hope to be operational by 2016. Remember, all of these plants are treating the water to a level where you can discharge it into the environment, but you still need some dilution. So it's fine for the environment for the time being, but you don't want to do that in the long term. That's why our long-term feasibility study determined that we eventually have to take out that water. Chair, and there's just a picture. That very first picture is the Ranch uranium treatment plant in the Western Basin, which has been upgraded. And the picture on the right-hand side and the one on the left-hand side, that's the pump station. And that those two pumps are pumps that have been donated by Central Rand Gold. I'll talk about the money later on, but those two pumps are currently pumping from a level about 200 meters below surface, and they can pump, I think, up to 400 or down to 400 meters from surface. So it's state-of-the-art pumps. The cost of those pumps were 36 million, and it was donated by the mining company at the time. So the next slide is, if we go to the costs, in terms of the capital expenditure, we envisage to spend 2.6 billion rand for the short term, the immediate and the short term solution. That's now for all three basins. And then, of course, for the long term solution, which is the desalination, will be approximately 8 billion rand. But I must say it up front, it's 8 billion rand, that's for desalination, for to treat the water up to a level you can actually drink the water. But the idea is that we try and still do some research and development and see if we can't make it cheaper. Because at the end, somebody will have to pay for it. And the operation and maintenance cost between 2015 and 2018, I just bulked it, is at a cost of about 875 million rand to treat the water to be able to discharge it. Then in terms of the funding for the legacy mines, Section 19 and 20 of the National Water Act is not feasible for abandoned mines. What Section 19 and 20 says is it's a proactive move. Section 19 is to tell somebody that, or to give them a directive, if you see that they're going to pollute, that you stop the pollution. So in other words, the department can issue them a directive, any mining company or any polluter for that matter. But then Section 20 is like more like an emergency control. So if they have polluted, you issue them a directive, and then government or who else can pay for it, come in and pay for it, and then get the money back from them. But we say we can't go back in history. Unfortunately, we tested this with the legal people, so it's what happened in the past is you can't get it back. Unless you have cash in kind, or whether people make donations, as I've explained later on, where I say that the Western Basin, we got about 50 million from them because we used their old plant, we just upgraded that, we're going to use their sites to put up new innovative technologies because people want to do pilot planting, and we said we can use the Western Basin for that. In the Central Basin, we got make use of their land, they gave it for us for free, they gave us a shaft, we're putting the treatment, the pump station, and also the land, and then also we're making use of their servitude, and we also co-dispose our sludge together with their sludge. So that amounts to about 465 million. And then Eastern Basin, the very same. We have there about 100 million rand, which we reckon is the shaft, worth of the shaft, value of the shaft, and then also the area where we're going to build the treatment plant. Funding of the current and the future mines. Inclusion of the AMD in Vaal River tariffs. So what we're saying is that because this Witwatersrand issue is in the Vaal River system, it's a shared responsibility amongst the government as well as the Vaal River users. So we're saying that the Vaal River users will have to pay for it. That portion we still have to work out, but it was also said by Cabinet at the time that we have to look at the implementation of an environmental levy. And we're doing that together with all the necessary and relevant departments under the leadership of National Treasury. And the waste discharge charge system is a system that the Department of Water and Sanitation will implement later on. And then, of course, you can get money back because of the sale of reclaimed mine water to mines and industry for commercial use, or you can actually take this water to a level where you can drink the water. So it all depends on, you know, where we can sign offtake agreements. And the sale of mine water treatment also have byproducts like gypsum and metal rich sludge, which you can also sell. The mines must make a contribution because they mine. I'm talking about now funding the current and future mines. And then also what I'm saying is that research and development must carry on. We must try and make it cheaper and more feasible so that eventually, you know, we don't have to pay that much. So the way forward, I've already said, try and minimize the AMD impacts is to be better managed during the life of mine. Currently we're doing damage control. The best is to, while the mine is still in the exploration phase, together with the other government departments like TMR, we have to look at, you know, the EMPRs, and we have to, add, from the beginning, get mine closure. From water affairs side, we have to look at the water use license. The minister also recently told me that we must look at incentives in terms of the water use license, so that the mines also get not punished only, but they must also get incentives if they do good. part of our annual performance up until 2019 is to assess all the catchments in South Africa and to look at the potential of AMD generating mines and to be upfront and make sure that we know where these mines are. Currently, we're busy with the Olifants and the Vaal River. So, see, the whole idea is to working together towards a better integrated approach between all the government departments so that in future, I think where we, and we must at least be working silos, I think in future we'll try and work as a collective intergovernmental approach. And I think the last slide, parallel initiatives such as monitoring, piloting new technologies, ingress control, remediation of surface AMD, that's still carrying on. The Department of Water and Sanitation is also currently busy with a policy and a strategy, and we will bring that in the mix as soon as possible. And then the Minister will soon appoint the implementation of the long term. I spoke about the long term solution. This is now where you take this partially treated water to a level where you can actually get money back for it, because at the moment we just started into the rivers and it's not getting any money back. There's no income from it. But you know, after the long term implementation, you can actually then sell the water and do something with it. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson, that's the background around the acid mine drainage. We'll move directly to the derelict analysis.
Thanks, Chair and honorable members. When we look at this particular project on Unalis and derelict mine, it takes us back to 2005 when the CGF was contracted to look at how much liability does the government have. At that time, the information was not available. We used various sources to get the information. And ultimately, by the end of 2008, we had the information that we have 6,000. We then went around to verify these sources of information. And for that reason, today we have a web-based database that one can access. To identify where these mines are, what type of commodities are mines, and so on. But then, we are not going to narrow our presentation particularly now to asbestos mines. Particularly because with asbestos mines, we're talking about the health impacts of these asbestos mines to the nearby communities. With asbestos mines, when we look into our database, we're talking about 245 mines out of the 6,000. And the communities around areas where asbestos mines happened, they then complained and the solicitors then that the department prioritized the rehabilitation of asbestos. Now, looking back at the history of asbestos, I mean, it took place way back in the 1980s, and clearly it was the big industry in South Africa. But unfortunately, the production methods were very crude. In some instances where small production took place, we're talking about space and wheelbarrow type of operations. It is mostly our people that are working on these mines. Around the 1980s, it became apparent that the use of asbestos mines is causing problems to the health of the community. And therefore, most of these mining companies started withdrawing from mining in South Africa. During that time, then most of these mines started getting acquisitions and merging. And ultimately, there were two major operations that were left, which is JEPCO in the Northern Cape and Musaudi in Babatri, in the Malanga area. These two mines that I'm mentioning now, they are also in the database as part of the Unalis mines. Ultimately, with this health effect, the asbestos mining completely ceased operation in 2003. And of course, the government had to start putting laws into place to ban the use, the manufacturing, the import and export of these asbestos mines in the country. And ultimately, the law was finally passed in 2008. with the health impact of these asbestos mines in communities, people started complaining about asbestosis. This is where some of these fibers get to be inhaled. They get to be stuck in your lungs, and with time, you start having problems with breathing and coughing and all this. That's when the government made provision to say, how do we then embark on the rehabilitation of these asbestos mines? And the rehabilitation program started. Then the estimated cost that the CFO is going to take us through is looking at the liabilities of asbestos mines and other commodities excluding asbestos mines. This is where we start talking about class A, class B, class C. When we start talking about class A, we're talking about our copper, our gold, our coal, and all that. Next slide. And the class B is the medium risk in terms of environmental risk. These are your alluvial diamonds, your phosphates, and limestones, and all that. The class C, these are industrial minerals like bends and aggregates and natural stones that we do the tabletops with in our homes. This map really gives us a feel of the extent of the degradation of these oil and mines in the country. This entries about 6,000. This is the distribution of where these oil and mines are distributed. So when you look at this map, you see that how things are impacted in Mpumalanga and the Northern Cape. This picture just gives you an idea of the kind of mines that we have in South Africa. In particular, when you look at this slide, it's back to the This is where what we call white asbestos was mined. You see we have river streams, erosion is taking place. All these fibers are then eroded into our river streams. You see that there are also houses close by to where these mine dams are. And when you look at the housing province, when you look at Gauteng province, this is where we find most of these mega shops, particularly around the east, west, and central. This shop that you are seeing in particular is along, around Langlaagte in the west. We then, as Council for Geoscience, go around and say, let's prioritize these shops that are close to our community. What you are seeing here is the shaft that was closed, it is around 2 months ago. Other challenges that we are experiencing with regard to this oil and mine would be the past coal mining activities, particularly around Emalahleni. The spontaneous fires are a challenge, AMD is a challenge, and subsidence. We also have a challenge with regards to the presence of illegal mining. And when you look at areas where gold was mined, in particular Gauteng, Free State, and Mpumalanga, you find that we have this syndicate of illegal mining for gold. And in KwaZulu-Natal, coal mining, they use it both for fire, in terms of coal that is, you know, an alternative to electricity and for building of bricks. In the Northern Cape, alluvial diamonds are a challenge. In the Eastern Cape, it's sand and aggregates. I think this takes me to the end of my portion of the presentation. I'll hand it over to the CFO.
So, Chairperson and Honourable Members, that is the background around collating and collecting information on the derelict on the mine. But then, at that time, after collecting that information, before we collected that information, we had a challenge with the Auditor General's report because they wanted to know, to say, as government in the area we are committed to, which is the asbestos mine, do we know exactly how much it will cost us to be able to rehabilitate this mine? And at that time, we didn't know how much it will cost us. Then Matoto Group, an actuarial and quantitative finance consulting business firm, was then engaged by the department and the Council for Geoscience to give us that valuation, the estimate using the valuation methodology, in order for us to have an amount that we can use for the presentation of our annual financial statement. And in doing that valuation, we followed the methodology of the way information is clustered, as Dr. Makaya has presented, the valuation in terms of the asbestos mine, valuation in terms of the class A type of risk, and the valuation based on the class B and class C risk. For the asbestos mine, we use the data of actual rehabilitation costs that has been incurred in the past, and in order to obtain an average actual rehabilitation cost per site. And we then inflated that amount with CPI in order to identify how much will cost us to rehabilitate at least one site. Then the result thereof showed that we need at least 9 million to rehabilitate one site. Then we then decided, based on that, we can then also add the maintenance and monitoring expenses that still come in, because once we have rehabilitated, there will still be some little bit of maintenance that needs to be done. So that's the amount that we have used for asbestos mine. For other commodities, in the past also, the department had gone out and requested and obtained the average cost of rehabilitating a mine, taking into account all the activities that needs to be done. So for class A mines, the data was analyzed separately for gold mines and the coal mines, and a suitable regression model was applied to that data and was used to estimate the closure coefficient based on the size of the mine. Then for class B and class C, we use the guideline that we had on calculating the rehabilitation, and it's different from class A, because the class A is more complicated mines, whereas class B, some of them are small mines, some of them they are not as complicated as the class A mines or sites. Then we adjusted that cost also for inflation from 2004 to 2015, and arrived at a closure cost estimate for class B and C in the database. There's no specialized rehabilitation methods that are required for class B and C, because it also includes the quarries in the class B and C. The department has provided a list of commodities that were mined that fall within that category. And this guideline provided the rehabilitation cost rate per hectare, where the minimum was around 50,000 per hectare, whereas the maximum is around 25 million per hectare. Now, having used all those methodologies, we found that the fair value of the liability in relation to rehabilitation of asbestos mine came to around 2 billion as at the 31st of March, because for financial accounting reporting we had to do this on an annual basis. And we could only disclose 199.6 million as a provision based on the budget that we have. And the other 1.8 billion was disclosed as a contingent liability in our financials. Then for other derelict and ownerless mines, which are the class B and C, we estimated an amount of 45.1 billion as at the 31st of March, 44 billion being the class A type of site, and around 1 billion in the taxes. So the estimated liability that we had was disclosing the annual financial statements and what was checked by the auditor general. And as I've indicated before, this is just an estimate. So from this exercise, when we look at where we come from as a department, we believe that we have made a lot of progress. We did not know at all the number of ownerless and zeroless mines in the past. At least now we are at a point where we know how many mines we have. So it is a continuous project where we go back to those 6,000 mines, where there are people that are, where there are owners that are still available that can take responsibility or take liability. We follow them and make sure that they take liability. And also, what is incorporated in our MPRCA is that if a new owner comes in, they take the liability with them. So that is a continuous exercise that we are going to do. We are doing. We will revalue the liability again in 2016, because there's a lot of work that has been done also during the year to follow up on the 6,000 mines. And with the limited financial resources that we have, we continue to explore better ways and mechanisms to optimize the management of the relevant mines. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, efficiency. Okay. Good. I'll pretend I didn't hear that. You must not be a stuff of God. It must always be the case, not Honourable members, there is a presentation. I think I must say, obviously, the presentation can be broken into three. It's the issue that relates to your water challenges, although they are all interlinked in terms of the work that is being done. It's the issue that relates to mine closure, but also it's the obvious challenge that we are always faced with, which is the issue of illegal mining. And all of them, obviously, you cannot treat them inseparable in terms of what the presentation is giving us. Any questions of clarity? Comments, etc. Honorable Mandela, Honorable Piginini, Honorable Smith, Honorable Lorima, in that fashion. Let me do it simple. Honorable Mandela, Honorable Piginini, Honorable Lorima, Honorable Schmidt. One person once said you'll come in your installment. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to appreciate the presentation as made by the department. From just on the three issues you've outlined, Chair, water is a scarce resource. Do we have enough water for South Africans rather than utilizing water for mining purposes? We are already seeing shortages in the Gauteng province in terms of water supply, and yet the mining communities in and around the province are utilize underground water for mining purposes. And this is a chicken egg situation, or what comes first, water for human consumption or water for mining purposes. So if you may clear that, because this may pose a security risk to the South African public. And in terms of the mining closures, you know, every mine has a lifespan, and there is a date of starting date and an end. And often, when it comes to the start, we celebrate the opening of the mine because it's the hope of the creation of jobs. Yet when the mine closes down, there are many challenges, job losses or what. But the mine left often in a state that is not rehabilitated. And we have to then, as a government or department, find yourself, you're chasing after companies that haven't abided as according to the rules. What is the department ensuring that you are able, when a mine closes down, to hold it accountable for a rehabilitation? You're speaking of figures here that if you're looking at 45 billion rand in terms of ensuring we are able to address the issue of mining closures, it's funds that should have come from the mining houses, and they should have been able to address that on their own. And it's funds that could be allocated elsewhere to other needy causes in terms of our people, whether it be human settlements, whether it be education, whether it be health. But now we are having to clean up on companies that haven't really held their end of the bargain. And I'd like to understand, what is the department doing to ensure that these mining houses can be held accountable? You do have a series of companies that are traceable. And coming fresh from our oversight at a vendor in Secunda, we visited, I think it's Shaft 8, that is now an abandoned site, where there used to be plus minus 2,000 laborers in that. But it's been abandoned. And the vendor is still there. In its lifespan, it's got 7 operators that have operated on that mine. Who is to be held accountable in ensuring that the mine closure is being dealt with in a proper manner? In illegal mining, we've witnessed illegal mining. It's in rife form in terms of Randfontein, and it's also in the areas of Spring. And the challenges there are really alarming. What is the department doing in ensuring to ensure that we are able to win the war on illegal mining? There's, for one of the illegal miners that we met, they were going in one of the shafts on a Thursday. We were in Randfontein and said they'd be coming out on a Monday or Tuesday. So there are citizens living underground, illegals, for one. What is the department therefore doing in that regard? To rid ourselves this illegal operation. And is it ever possible that we can truly close down and win this war against illegal mining? It's another question. Thanks, Chair.
I'm saying that from there's a lot of improvement in this presentation. If you still remember when it was brought to us before, it was talking about bit by piece and pieces. But now there is a coherence, and we know what you are dealing with now, what type of animal you are dealing with, and the income invested in that one. So that's why I'm becoming. And then the second to that presentation, you see, you could be able now, it proves that if you don't work in silos, the three departments, water, mineral, and environment, if they can come together, this work, they cannot be sustainable this way. They can deal with it. Because you come to the budget, you come close, and you'll be able to deal with that. It becomes difficult if it's one. Because if you talk to the amount, the budget, estimated one at the last, it sounds huge. But I think for this term around, at least you can deal with a lot of work. At least there will be some kind of improvement, even if it be tough. But I think the other matter which I want really, that I know that where we were weak in terms of the development, it's an issue of using recession and development. We don't use that one. And that is in this country, I think that's our weakest point. Now, if we started to do that, it has assisted us now to know what type of animal we're dealing with. And then I'm saying, Chair, we can deal with this particular matter as long as we can have a proper plan to say each term, or each year, annual, how we're going to deal with it. And then it will work out for that budget to be put down, shut it down, and all of that. It will assist us, Chair. I wanted to raise that point, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair.
I'd like to start by asking some questions about acid mine drainage on the reef. Before my time on this committee, and I think before the time of most of the people here, there was an effort by commercial mining companies to provide a solution on acid mine drainage. Could you tell us what happened to that? Secondly, could you give us some more detail on your proposed long-term solution to AMD on the reef? What are you planning? And is private enterprise involved in that, or do you see it as being a government initiative solely? My third question is related to Honourable Piccanini's. You've told us that the total liability is around $47 billion. How much is being spent per year at the moment across government departments on rehabilitation?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'm trying to understand it all because in the process, up until 1991, you indicated there was a mining legislation produced in terms of rehabilitation, mine closure, etc. And I get the impression that only around about 2008 did you understand the liability of the mine closure, the total sum total as to what happened at 2008. But my concern is, and I hope it's a concern and an ungrounded fear, and that is, although it is always cost effective to rehabilitate, apparently when you are busy with operations, because you're there on the site, you use the machinery, you can whatever, the systems are running. But does the department as it sits here today have an indication, a realistic indication as to cost closure provisions? Because remember, we're now 2008 and only then do you realize what the cost really is. And I'm not saying it should be higher, I'm not saying it should be lower. All I'm saying is there a realistic notion of what mind closure in fact costs, because it can work both ways. It can be a sympathy argument to the mind saying, listen, this is totally, or whatever. All I'm saying is I'm asking that question. What is the situation? Is there realistic provisions for mind closure? Is there realistic provision? I'm talking about present and future, because it is not inconceivable some of these mines may even close down during these economic times. And the question is there enough provision to ensure that there is mines will be closed properly, and we don't exacerbate the problem, obviously. The other issue is mines do pay corporate tax. They pay VAT, they pay import tax, they pay export levies, they pay as you earn, they pay UIF, they pay, more importantly, royalties. It will always be a shared responsibility, because AMD rehabilitation will always be a shared responsibility, because I can foresee in 50 years' time the mining companies in South Africa at least not continue to exist. I mean, I don't know, it may be 100 years, but at some point in time it will stop to exist. I mean, nothing is forever. Your current, the only figure I see here, provision made for, is 200 million rand. I don't see other figures in terms of provision for that particular liability. I saw a figure a few years ago which equates you to about 0.01%. I think it was another note, but let's be kind to the bottom. I think it was 0.01% of what the liability was provided for by the department. What is this percentage wise, that provisioning for this liability? Because at 0.01%, we're going to ad infinitum try and resolve this matter, and we're going to get nowhere, because the problem is just going to exacerbate, because the CPI is going to keep on creeping up. So is there enough provision? If so, what is the provision? And then, in my view, the issue is important enough to have it discussed at the mining for peace. Are you considering having it discussed at the mining for peace? Because this should be a total government, union, private sector consideration. It's not just a Department of Water Affairs, or just a mining company, or just a... I'm asking this question. I don't know what the answer is, but I'd like to know. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members, for the feedback. Some of the questions raised were comments and recommendations, and we will definitely take it back and implement and find ways of implementing the recommendations that has been made. I will ask Maria to respond on the questions from Honourable Mandela regarding the water, the question from Honourable Lorimer regarding the water, also it will come from Maria. Ruben here, Mr. Matsinya, is responsible for mine closure, Honourable Mandela, and he's the one who makes sure that... he's the one actually who ensures that before the mining companies can be discharged of their responsibility and get their guarantees released, he's the one who facilitates that signing off. Because like we have indicated, in the past we didn't have the act to manage it. Now we have got the MPRDA. It clearly requires the submission of the environmental management plan, and it has got pages where it can be signed off, and the actual closure can only happen when all the conditions that are on the environmental management plan have been complied with. So he will also answer some questions coming from there, and Dr. Mahaye will give us some questions relating to, answers relating to illegal mining, on just to share some of the things that we are currently doing in the department. And from Honorable Smith, the issue around the provision is an accounting provision. And it's based on the accounting loss, on what you can put in your books as a provision, based on the budget that you have. So in answering whether we have provided enough, the enough can only be enough in relation to the budget that we have. But like Honorable Lorimer has indicated, we are working now together to try and leverage from the little budgets that the different departments have. Now that we are working with the Department of Water Affairs, we don't go now and budget for rehabilitation of the effluent mine drainage, because we know Water Affairs is working on it. Environmental Affairs is working on certain portions. Then we look at the areas, and we are now working more together as a team, and we continue to improve in that area. So I'll start with the water issue, whether we've got enough water there, Maria.
Thank you, CFO, Mr. Chair. Honorable Mandela, in terms of water security in Gauteng, I honestly don't think that we have a problem. We do the so-called Vaal River Reconciliation Strategy, and we do that on an annual basis. So we run models to see, you know, what is the availability of water, not for only this year, but, you know, for the next 20 years. And that's why, you know, augmentation schemes like the Sulawesi Island Water Project 2 will now come into place, and it will be operational by, I think, 2024 now. But this is also why we saw that the AMD has to be taken out of the system by the latest 2018-2019, because there's enough water for dilution, but after that we could run into a bit of a challenge in terms of water security. So that's all part of the department's strategy, is to look in terms of the long term. So I can in all security say that, you know, we don't have problems. But it's a tight schedule, let's be honest. It is a tight schedule. We mustn't slip 1 year. But if it goes according to plan, we shouldn't have problems, I think. And that actually also applies for the Free State, because, you know, some of the Free State areas also get water from the Vaal River system. Then in terms of, you know, I think there was also a question, I don't know where it came from, but, you know, what do we do with the water? We always try to make use of the water by treating it, by using the cheapest option. Because if you have water coming from underground, that water is not of suitable quality for drinking or for domestic purpose or for industrial purpose. You've got to take that water and, you know, give it to the mines, take it for, you know, for rehabilitation of some of them, to take some of the tailings facilities away to wash it. So that's the first price. So that the mines must reuse their own water. And I think that's also, Chair, in terms of the future, we want to emphasize that the mines must try and reuse, that's the first price, reuse the water before they discharge the water. So that, you know, instead of taking water from Rand Water, for instance, in our case, in the Bidvest Rand area, they must use their own water. So that's always the first price. Then there's a challenge in terms of working in silos. Yes, I mean, I mentioned it, and I think everybody around the table is fully aware that in the past, I think government departments were probably guilty of that. But because of the new initiatives from the ministers and the DGs and what the CFO also said, we are now working together. You know, we've got one purpose. We're looking after the water. We've got our challenges there, and the mining department will look after their own issues, and of course there's environmental affairs as well. So we're working together. It's not in silos anymore. So in terms of the budget also, we share, you know, information so that we don't duplicate anything. The challenge on, I think the question, Honorable Lauren, from, is it? Lauren, your question in terms of what happened with there's a so-called Western Utility Corporation, I think, the WAC proposal that was put on the table. Just one step back. There's no way that one can make money out of the treatment of acid mine drainage. You can use the best option at the moment. The technology available is you're not going to make money out of it. Meaning that the proposal that they put on the table, there would have been always a deficit. And that deficit would have come from government. And that's why Cabinet at the time decided that instead of, you know, giving it to one company, which will then be an unsolicited bid, and we would have problems with the PFMA, rather let government take it over. And that's why government took it over and said, but, you know, we will be responsible and we will make sure that we get everybody on board. This is exactly what we're doing.
when the minister will make the announcement in terms of who's going to do the long-term solution, that will be part of the options, is to look at, you know, what do we get from private companies, and what must government's contribution be, and what must the contribution be from the mining sector. In terms of what is that realistic? I think there was a realistic cost, an estimate, but I think the CFO answered that. In terms of the long-term solution, as I said, the minister will make the announcement soon. However, at the time when we did the feasibility study, it was said that, you know, there's only one way out, and that's to desalinate the water. And we all know that you have to take that water out of the system, because it's not good practice to discharge it, but you need times five. In other words, for every liter of partially treated water that we dump into the Vaal River system, you need approximately 4 to 5 liters of good quality water to dilute that water, which is a bad water quality management practice. But if you have a sustainable source, like what we have now, you can do that. But it can't be forever. And that's why we put a limit to it. And we said by 2018, you must take that water out of the system and do it and treat it. In treating that water, you actually, it's a twofold solution. The one is you don't need the dilution anymore. And the second is you also make a contribution, because you take that, it's up to 200 megaliters per day of water that we'll be pumping, which is not good quality water. But you'll treat that water to a level where you can use it, and then of course you can replace the water that we're using from Rand Water at the moment with that quality of water. So it's a dual, it's a win-win situation for the whole system. And of course the technology, as I've said, Chair, we try to improve on the technology the whole time. And it's catchment-based uniqueness. So in other words, what's good in the Western Basin, it's not the same as in the Central Basin, it's not the same as in the Eastern Basin. For instance, in the Western Basin, you've got uranium, which is radioactivity. In the Central Basin, the uranium levels are very, very low. In the Eastern Basin, you've got slightly levels, there are low levels of uranium. So you have to look at the different treatment options as well. It's not, you know, one solution for all of them, but that's also part of the technology that we are looking at.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, as well as honourable members. I'm going to deal with the questions relating to mine closure. With regards to the lifespan for mines, yes, we are aware that mines comes and goes, and at a certain time, you know, there will be a time whereby, you know, mines are not going to be there anymore. Now, what is the department doing to make sure that we are not going to end up with this kind of a problem that we are faced with? I think the CFO, as well, she was presenting, she has highlighted the point that since from 2002, the MPRDA Act, there was an introduction with regards to financial provisioning. Now, the financial provisioning is aimed at addressing this particular issue, because of once you have financial provisioning in place, you are then making sure that mines are setting aside funds that are suitable to deal with any environmental issues that might arise in the future. Yes, one can also highlight the point that, you know, with regards to any other technology, methodologies, you know, improvements are able to be done. And, you know, in 2004, when it was introduced, we're still working in silos. I think my colleague from Water and Sanitation has highlighted that we're working in silos. And that is why currently we have built up, you know, the financial provisioning. And, you know, with cooperation between the three government departments and enforcing the environment in one piece of legislation in the NEMA, then that will allow us to make sure that all relevant issues that can arise in the future are then dealt with accordingly. So I think maybe that perpetuity issue, department is doing something to make sure that this financial provision should be sufficient to deal with future problems. Just to also talk about the issue about the licensing that, you know, as we are aware that sometimes you might have one owner in a mine, and after some time, you know, that mine is owned by another person and another and so forth, and you end up with about 7 owners. Now, what is government approach or what is the department approach to deal with the situation? I would like to highlight, Chairperson, that with regards to MPRDA, MPRDA has introduced the section that specifically informs that when the mine license is passed to the next person, the liability as well is passed to that particular person. So in essence, the introduction of MPRDA, that particular section, and which is already enforced under the NIMA as well, it will make sure that the last person, I mean, because of, with regards to, you know, when you buy a specific mine or specific site, you know, one can say that in their sellables, you know, mines are able to be sold with the issues around them. So that is why now, as the department before, that process of then passing the license to the next person on the mining right, you know, there should be a process, which is what we've printed in place in the MPRDA, and we've more again enforced it under the NIMA to make sure that, you know, before it goes to the next person, it should be clear that that particular person will be able to take ownership of that liability that was done by the previous owners. So there's that portion. I would like to also highlight the point around, there was a question around illegal mining. What is government position because of, you know, there's a number of issues around illegal mining. What are we doing from the department side as well as from government? I would like to share with you, honorable members, that government has created a structure to deal with this illegal mining. This structure is called National Intelligent Coordinating Committee. This committee is made up of not only DMR, but since we know that illegal mining is it's something that is threatening as well the state security. So this forum is made up of police, it's made up of intelligence, and DMR forms part of that as well, a number of key stakeholders, to try now and, you know, not only look at this illegal mining from the prison of mining only, but to also look at it in its context, you know, with regards to say that from now the police part, what needs to be enforced, from the intelligence part, what needs to then be enforced, so that we make sure that as government, you know, we holistically deal with this issue as one government. So that structure, we are part of it, and we participate, and I think maybe as the time progresses, we will see more results coming out from the forum. But currently, you know, one can report to say that things are going very well because of the training now is integrated, and we are definitely sure that this issue around illegal mining will be dealt with accordingly with all key government departments as well as stakeholders to make sure that we then move forward on this one. And there was also a question with regards to mining practice. I'm not sure if the mining practice. Honorable members, we would like to report as well that on the mining practice, we've included this in our agenda. As you are all aware, that mining practice is aimed at addressing the fragmentation in the legislation. That's one part, because of, you know, as one government, we have to speak one language. And as one government, we must have one piece of legislation. I'm saying one piece, meaning that MPRDA and also other legislation, you know, to talk about one language. And we have included all these issues that relate to mine under the mining practice. And the current development is going very well. And I guess probably as the time progresses, more information will be coming out of the process. Thank you very much.
She was going to talk about illegal mining, so I think she had covered it. So, yeah. Oh, you want to add something?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. 2018 deadline. And you talked about the minister announcing a plan soon. Which minister, and do you know more or less when that will be? And then I'm still short of an all-encompassing figure for government expenditure per year on rehabilitation. Do you have that? Thanks.
Chairperson, I wouldn't have that. I will have the figures that have been spent. I mean, I think we need clarity to say, when we say government figure on rehabilitation, we are dealing here with ownerless and derelict mine. We can give you the cost of ownerless and derelict mine rehabilitation that has taken place. WaterFirst can give you the figure of the cost that they've incurred for acid mine drainage, water treatment, for an example. I just don't have all the costs here with me, but we can make the cost for ownerless and derelict mines available.
Chair, yes, I can answer Honourable Larimer. In terms of the plan that the Minister is going to announce, she said that she will do it before the end of September. So by then we'll have a long-term plan. And in terms of the time frames, yes, I'm comfortable because we, on the one side, also checking the environmental critical level, so we have a very good monitoring system that will tell us, you know, how we, you know, when it should be implemented and so on. So, but I think we will be implementing it in time, and there shouldn't be a water security problem. As I've said, we're running on a tight schedule. We can't slip anywhere, but I'm comfortable at the moment. Then in terms of cost, Mr. Chair, I'll give you approximately cost. I mean, if we look at the Emalahleni works, the Emalahleni works is the one close to Witbank that's been done by, I think it's Anglo Ashanti, who built that treatment plant. Their cost is about 14 rand, as an estimate cost, about 14.70 per cubic meter. That's to take acid mine drainage from AMD, raw AMD, to a level where you can drink the water, because we all know that they sell that water, of course, at a loss, because I've said that you can't make money out of it, but they sell that water at a cost of total 14.70. 17, that's what they pay for it. They sell it, of course, at a loss, because, I mean, you can't pay 14.70, you know, for your drinking water. I think in Pretoria, we're paying, what is it, 7 rand or 8 rand a cubic meter. So there's definitely a loss. But in terms of treatment, just for the HDS, that's a so-called high-density sludge, that's the partial treatment that we're currently doing for the short term, is approximately 5 rand per cubic meter. So the balance, which is 10 rand more or less, is for desalination. So the desalination process is the more expensive part of the cost.
Okay. In the absence of the minister and the DG, some of these issues may be difficult to deal with. But I think with what has been given, I once spoke to some of the mine bosses. Sometimes out of the bad you can get the best. Now I think maybe, not as a justification, this issue of energy crisis may be presenting an opportunity for them to look at what are the best alternative models. I may not necessarily challenge what you are arguing, but I think part of the work that as departments, but also as a department, is to look out of the crisis what opportunities will be there. I'm worried because when I look at the presentation, it tends to, first, you are not saying it openly. I know you are giving us hope around water, but there's only one thing. I listened to one SAPC advert that was saying the next war will be the absence of water. There will never be another world war with the absence of water. And I was saying to one Christian person that surely Christians did not know when God said we only use water again to punish them, that he may also withdraw water completely. That possibility exists. Now the point I'm coming to is that I think first let's deal with the issue of water, and particularly around the issues of acid mine drainage. And hopefully the minister when makes that long term, it will also deal much broader with the issue of what opportunities will emerge out of that process. It's difficult now to preempt what that, but obviously the committee is not necessarily about us dealing with water, but at the impact of what mining has as a contributory effect on the problems of water. And I hope that long term, because my main worry is that I can't get a sense, but I hope there is a collaboration or a contribution that DMR is making in that process. Because to be honest, not necessarily directly, but to be honest, when you go to the Department of Water and Sanitation, including environment, you are the culprit. Whatever law they make in order to deal with the damage that probably you are causing, maybe through your stakeholders. That's the first issue. So I think we must say that we, in that process, in that long-term strategy, must also link to what the DMR is doing. I think on this issue of ownerless and derelict mines, I think the first thing that we must say, you see, I like when people, they make comments in person, because sometimes you must detail those comments and they educate some of us. Let's agree, just in simple, that part of the problem that there can be no liabilities on those who were owning the mines is the fact that the law cannot apply retrospectively. Because initially we have always had this thing, I always had this thing in my mind. You give us many reasons, but now I understand what is. Because initially when we were raising this thing, but how come you can have a person who digs so deep and then you say, no, we can't find these people, we can't track these people, even if they are 7 times. Now, I understand. The simplest thing is that even if you track and find them, you cannot make them account on a law that was not in existence at that moment. So it's not just a problem of tracking, it's a problem also of the legal framework that by law you can no longer challenge those people. They mean they are not liable. So I think we for me that's how we must put the matter to rest. But I must say this, and I think I'm saying it. You see that thing that you're putting there, that bioscope is quite minimal on the mine closure. I think part of the issue that as you work, again, we've got advocates here, not to be, let alone that we've got chiefs, not Kaiser chiefs, traditional leaders, we also have got advocates. Your good intentions, and I think that's the point, your good intentions sometimes may create problems for you.
at some point, I hear the CFO doesn't want to answer that question that Honorable Lorimer was. When you talk to the committee, we must be able to go and say, here is a problem. The reality is that we must be able to quantify financially how much with this issue of dealing with ownerless and derelict mine is going to bear cost. I'm raising this thing because it was going to be difficult to deal with the case. You go to the Israel or the path that you put of Gauteng. Once you take responsibility to say you close, you deal with them, you must also understand the consequences out of expectation. And I can give you the example and say now, if you put the Osizweni situation, if anything happened there, it may not be the fact that you can no longer trace those who started the project. The reality that people may come now, you take liability in terms of managing the situation, but you may also take responsibility for only consequences thereof. So the pace to which you go, you may not have an excuse that says no because of financial limitations and so forth. So we must be able to I don't want to use a very strong word, but we must be able to make people understand the extent of the crisis that we might be facing. Honestly, if you go to Gauteng and people will tell you that as I sit here, when I look down, I think I can see someone who's walking underground. If that house collapses or anything happens, out of goodwill, people might come back to you and say, because of the pace you are using. So I'm saying that issue I understand, even if it's estimate based on what has already been done and looking at the pace, it might be able to help. So that when we deal with the issue of how you finance the project, we can be able to motivate on the extent of how it's becoming a threat to life. I think that's the point for me. That remains critical. It's not just a question of what has to be done. I know it's difficult as well, but it's not an easy thing to deal with. Now on the so I think with that now I at some point if we come to this issue again of the we might be able to get a sense of what are the opportunities that could emerge? Look, mining companies now are talking about entrenchment and so forth. Has the department been able to engage particularly with department? There's something that is called, what do you call this thing? The EPWP programs. Have you been able to explore the department on how, rather than, you say sometimes for people to be paid to, I'm not saying I know, I've come from the rural areas sometimes, to make a road, it's okay. It's a gravel road, so it's okay. But if you thought of an idea on how this issue, obviously it will also require high level of skill development that must take place. But have you looked at how the Department of Public Works can be brought on board on a serious, intense program? That obviously will be under the monitor, under the stewardship of the GMR on how to deal with this crisis of particularly around issues of mine closure. I'm just saying, have you looked at that, including the use of your current labor force that you have now that is under threat? How is there no way that linkage can be done? So I'm just saying on that part for me, it may assist us to fast track the process of dealing with a potential crisis that can become more worse, but also can address the issue of the creation of jobs in one way or the other and improving the skills level that is required. So it then takes me to the next issue of the, I understand, you see sometimes I always say the problem is like, at times people, they require a quorum for a meeting.
sometimes those forums are quote unnecessary. And it's not for me to be a critique of what is being done. On this issue of illegal mining, and I think we've dealt with this thing quite over at the time, and we've raised it with the department. I hope you are taking the some of the areas that we said must be considered. I just can't imagine this thing, because these people don't dig from their own countries, and to up to a point where they're in their mind. No, let's be honest. It's absolutely unbelievable the high number or the high turnover of those people who are in this business of illegal mining. And must be honest, majority of them are foreign nationals. It then tells us we have a problem with our own. I know we may not address, it's not a tourism committee, portfolio committee, but the reality is that maybe when it comes to this thing, to what extent has our former friends been engaged? You know, it's so strange, I always say this thing, I can't remember a South African that you would be told, no, with due respect, we know these borders were not created by us. But I can't imagine a South African who goes in Lesotho and they fight with the Swazis. It can only happen in South Africa that when there is gangster war, it's Zimbabwean versus Mozambicans, or the Sotos, those from the Lesotho, are fighting with the Zimbabwean. And sometimes we say it with confidence. What extent, and you're not talking about 14 or 15 people here. At some point we're told in one area there is approximately about 14,000. So it means you've got a high risk that 14,000 of those people who are in illegal mining are non-South Africans in one point, in one area. To what extent in this forum have we engaged with the Department of Home Affairs, and what are the possible areas or areas of weakness that we need? I understand the issues that relate to whether you can do law enforcement to an extent that it becomes much more tighter, but the reality is that you are dealing with individuals right here. The second part is to what extent there has been engagement with the departments that are responsible for economic development and growth, particularly your Department of Economic Development, as well as the small business. Sometimes I don't get a sense, particularly from your side, DMR, that there is an engagement of making sure that the task of especially small business is enhanced, mostly in order to deal with issues of a possible creation of small-scale mining. So I'm just saying these are some of the issues for me that will require to be factored in. But as we're going to move now to the next stage, we must be able to, because sometimes even the point that you're raising, I'm still quite skeptical that you don't set aside any possible areas of funding, because AMD now is being taken as a responsibility of water and sanitation. The reality is that even if we are going to do so, I think we must find a way to say, because of the magnitude of the challenge, these are the issues that must be focused on, so that you don't get sometimes when you deal with the budget, when there are cuts. Because you are cutting even before you are told you must cut. When they are going to be cut on the budget, it's on the basis that we are saying is going there. We must be able to say, as it goes there, to what extent are we motivating for a higher stake in relation to what can be a long-term threat to the resources of this country. So I'm just saying, but if you want to comment on those areas, you are free.
Thank you.
Chairperson, for the comments, and we'll take forward some of the comments. I think I just want to confirm and clarify Lorimar's question, Honorable Lorimar's question. He wanted to know how much has been spent, not how much we are going to spend. How much we are going to spend is what we have presented here as the estimate of 2 billion for the contingent liability that we have disclosed in the financial statement and the estimation. So that's the estimation going forward. But how much we have spent to date, I thought that's what Honorable Lorimar is looking for. We have that amount because we had requested budget from National Treasury and we've been spending over the years around 110 million every year. Same with the issue of acid mine drainage. We are not saying it's the responsibility of Water Affairs and therefore we are no longer responsible. Chairperson, when I started, I said from the department side, we have got money that we transfer to Council for Geoscience on a yearly basis for the preventative measures, which is more on the research part of preventing the acid mine drainage going forward. But the actual water treatment is done by Water Affairs, and when they request the budget, they go directly. Treasury will not give money to us. So we are not like hands off. We are still working together in that part. Then on the issue of illegal mining, Chairperson, you would remember we had made a lot of presentation about the challenges that we are experiencing with illegal mining and the forums that are in place, which also tries to look at the legislation around illegal mining, on the fines that even if when you arrest these people, then they get a fine and then they are out within a very short space of time. So for the illegal mining is a bigger project, which of course we are engaging with all the role players, including Home Affairs and other entities like police. On the economic development and growth, yes, we are working with the Department of Small Business Development. We just had a conference recently in Kimberley on small-scale mining, and the Minister of Small Business was there. So we'll be having one in 2 weeks' time in KZN. So we are now starting to work with the Department of Small Businesses to address small-scale mining challenges, which illegal mining also comes to them. EPW, there were discussions that are taking place with the Department of Public Works, and I think my colleague can just share some more information around this. We agree that we have to accelerate implementation of this project so that we don't find ourselves in trouble. We have also, at the department, started an rehabilitation oversight committee, because some of the projects are implemented by Council for Geoscience, some are implemented by MINTEC. So we have started that oversight committee that now will be tracking progress on an ongoing basis to say, we have allocated you so much to fix, let's say, the Osusen mine. How far are you? What are the challenges? And come up with solution around it. So I'll just ask him to elaborate on the EPW.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. With regards to EPWP, I think, Chairperson, I can report to say that we have already engaged with them. And the initial start point of our engagement was then to see how, with regards to the current rehabilitation, you know, how we can then be able to take opportunity, you know, for job creation, and to make sure that we also are able to then do things according to their requirements on the EPWP. Yes, you've mentioned another important element with regards to, say, with regards to the current crisis where people are losing jobs. That one, I think, Chairperson, as we started with the EPWP on this first one, we are hoping that it will end up giving us, direct us towards a position whereby at the end, we'll then end up probably utilizing this opportunity to then deal with the current crisis.
Okay. And then the last one on the long-term solution, the department is part of the interministerial task team on the water access, so we'll work together to ensure that we work
in the same direction.
Something
about Dandy? It has been either now.
Thank you.
Honorable members, there is a boss next to me. She continues to wield power. Now, so that I don't get accused, we can take a 5-10 minute stretch break. We come back and deal with the minute and the announcement, and then exalt Alice Khan. Good.
Thank you.
invited guests, if you can excuse us, would like to proceed. Invited guests, can we have the hello, attention please? Can we please be able to proceed? Our invited guests, can you excuse us? Can we continue, honorable members? Where's my card? Okay, can we continue, honorable members? We now go to the minutes. Please don't make me speak all the time so that you can finish on time. Page 1, we are dealing with the minutes. Any corrections? Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5, whether it's a correction or what, there was an issue that we needed to do a better rewording. That's why I was asking my secretary. We will suggest when we deal with matters arising, we'll come back and say how do we suggest the rewording. But I think the matter still stands as a decision for now. Honorable Schmidt?
Mr. Chair, I think the minutes are meant for formalistic purposes. I see we now have Nkosi ZMD Mandela, and then we have Nkosi ZMD. So you look at the page 5. Page paragraph 7, it says Nkosi ZMD.
Oh.
And paragraph 8, Nkosi ZMD. I guess it would be Mandela.
I wouldn't know what would have been the agreement between the secretary and Nkosi Mandela. Because you seem to be comfortable with me.
respect that correction. Being the case as it lay on matters arising, page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. On page, oh no, sorry, it's me who will be taking you back. It's me who will be taking you back. Amongst the issues on matters arising based on that resolution, then on the report, this is what was suggested in terms of the rephrase, that the DMR should be invited to present to a joint meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources, Rural Development, and Traditional Affairs on how they are going to implement. That's the summary, which is what is contained here. Then we added that in that presentation, it should also include all the boards that are presently receiving royalties, including the Ngonyama Trust Board. That was what is being suggested in terms of the rephrasing. If the members agreed, we will take that. No, I made a mistake. The minutes were never moved. Is there a move of the minutes? Now at least we'll move even with the matters arising, including the amendment and the rewording. Honorable Mane.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to move for the adoption of the minutes of the 12th of August, 2015. With amendments effected as outlined. Thank you.
Any second? Honorable Mafon.
I second the adoption of the minutes, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay. We are now on announcements. Just a few issues, honorable members. The first one is that next week there is no committee sitting. And it has been submitted which committees will be sitting because of the legislation. The second thing is that we are expected to nominate or appoint 6 people who will attend a SADC PF, which is a Parliamentary Forum Capacity Enhancement Training Workshop, that will be on the 27th to the 28th. Was expected to, I hope I read it correctly. It says the purpose of it is this serves to bring to your attention and further actioning from the respective files that your committees have been nominated to attend and participate in the SADC Parliamentary Forum Training Workshop on the Barometer for Mineral Resources Governance in Southern Africa. It's taking place here in Cape Town, 27 and 28. It says a total of 24 members of Parliament will participate in this workshop, and these will be derived from both houses of Parliament. I therefore request that you nominate
or the powers and discretion. I therefore request that you nominate 6 members each from your respective committees, taking into consideration the participation of all political parties. This suggests then that we will need to do that nominee, that that appointment. Now, that is one issue. I've not dealt with the formula, as you spoke there, except we're to ask for a guidance. But we've got five. One of the things you will recall, we still have got the crisis that from the opposition side, we don't have the full complement. There are still 4. The 5th one is not there because Honorable Esteza says he's an alternate. So he's not a member of the committee, he's an alternate of the committee, which therefore leaves us with the ANC, the DA, the FF, and the AIC. That's what you have. And the difficulty is that a committee, I think, in terms of the rules, can't appoint an alternate. That's the problem. But we'll check on that. So it means we will have the ANC, the DA, the FF, and the AIC members of the committee. How do we spread it? No, that's going to be possible. We will have to deal with that.
For a possible start to discussion. There are 6 members. They say G, N, C, 1 DA, 1 AIC, and 1 EFA. So that gives us 6 as a starting point. I don't know whether there's any other views not set in concrete.
Okay. Then, honorable members, on the program, let's go there. I did notify honorable members. I'll come back on that issue. There was a discussion in the meeting of the chairperson. The first thing that you'll recall, we said we are looking at a possible oversight visit to Limpopo. One of the things that emerged in that meeting of the chairperson was that there is a need for committees to interact. For an example, we just had the presentation now by Water Affairs, and you find that when you go there, you go for a oversight visit. But for something, as an example was made, that you get the portfolio committee on basic education, it will go on an oversight in case that they'll go to a school. Then following another oversight comes in the same place, same school, now to look at the maybe arts and culture, to look at the book material, whether there are libraries or what. Then come telecommunications or whatever, goes there to look as to whether there are computers and so forth. So the issue then where they're going to look at how the committees can
interrelate in terms of oversight. So that is one part. But we are still suggesting that week of the 16th, we continue with it. Then we are suggesting that we must take the, because now we have got the 27 is out, 27 is out, then there is the 2nd. We then said that 22nd, we ask, we'll deal with the normal thing, we ask the, and we'll be submitting that report, we ask the researcher to now give us that work that he has done in relation to an assessment and evaluation of the performance of the committee. And looking at to what extent have we been able to action, and what would be the result? What are the results? What we have agreed on as a committee. So we'll be looking not necessarily to check our performance, but to look at the work done so far by the committee and the effectiveness that they would have been able to do. So it's a real discretion. Then you will also give an assessment of the quarterly report. So in the main, we'll be dealing with two issues: committee, our own assessment, and then we'll deal with the issue of the quarterly report. That's what we are suggesting, because we don't know, the possibility may exist that after that again there will be another activity. So we have to, by the time we go for the oversight work, we must have done, looked at the quarterly report, because when we come back we may not have that opportunity. Then we are then suggesting that we then on the 9th we will then deal with the women in mining strategy. The department will give us that presentation. Then the rest is what is left there. So that is what I think honorable members is left. So the program, we have tried to adjust it in such a way that we must be able to do the necessary and the required work. I think those are the announcements. One way to say that those are the announcements that we are having. On that note, the meeting stands adjourned. Can the it's obvious it's only the DA that must be read that.
If we can't go, then someone else can go. No.